here. Although I spend a lot of time on both coasts, I too rarely have a chance to come to the Midwest, which is a place which offers such incredible stability to the Waldorf movement. We'll talk more about the nature of that stability and the tremendous instability that one might see right now on the coasts, but that won't affect you. You don't have to worry about that. Now, I'm going to be giving just a few lectures. They're on a vast amount of subjects, and it just brings to mind a time when I went to a new parent evening at my school, Green Meadow Waldorf School, which is a very large school, and it wasn't unusual to have 30 or 40 new families every year. So we had a very full group that night. I got in just in time, sat down in the back, and I was sitting next to someone I had never seen before, clearly a new parent. Before the first speaker arose, he looked at me and he said, "Did you ever hear the story about the spaced out Waldorf teacher?" And I said, "Well, actually, I am a Waldorf teacher. I teach here." He said, "That's okay. I'll tell it slowly." Now, I don't have that luxury this weekend. I'm going to be moving very quickly through things. Certainly, we'll have time for questions and discussions, and certainly at mealtimes or other breaks, we'll have a chance to talk about things that might need more clarification. But so much is facing the Waldorf movement right now that I think it's very important just to throw out a lot of thoughts and hope that they somehow settle, as Flora said, in you, become your own, and you see what direction you want to go with them. The first century of Waldorf education, we're not too far away. The year 2009 will be the 90th anniversary already. We actually are in the first century because Steiner's lecture on the education of the child in the light of anthroposophy was given 101 years ago. And that really lays down the basis of Waldorf very eloquently. That can be found in Roberto Trusley's remarkable compilation, Rhythms of Learning. You want to sort of go back to the Ur root, primal root of Waldorf education through that lecture. So the first 100, you're really experiencing him. And what class teacher, what specialty teacher, what Waldorf administrator ever feels they have all the time that they need for all of their tasks? Things are getting far more stressful and far more pressured than they were. But this is really the mark of a Michaelic age. This is why Alexander the Great, in the last Michaelic age, felt the pressure of conquering, conquering, conquering. He knew his life would be short. He knew he had to experience the entire known world. And so off he went in a ceaseless embrace, really, of the world at that time. And now, in a way, Waldorf schools are meant to be part of that as well. Who here is a first grade teacher? Okay. This autumn, this past autumn, when you shook the hands of the children coming into your classroom on the first day of first grade, it was a historic moment, not just for you, but for the world, because these first graders, all of them, in all Waldorf schools throughout the world, were all born in the 21st century. They are all children of a new century, of a new millennium. That's not happened before. Up till now, all Waldorf children were born in the 20th century. Now they're born in the 21st as they come into the school. Things can't remain the same. Things are going to be changing. And we have to see, did Steiner give us the tools, not just the recipes, to be able to replicate what was done in 1919 in the first Waldorf school, not just to follow Steiner's indications about teaching various subjects, but did he give us tools to be flexible, mobile, to be able to move forward with the age. And that is the great challenge of Waldorf education. I would say, by and large, right now, the independent Waldorf schools have reached a kind of plateau. There's a quality of uncertainty. Where do we go from here? What do we need to do next? A kind of vacuum occurs because there are many spiritual beings who want Waldorf schools to exist, and they will just go on to the next. If an independent school can't do it, they'll go to charter schools. They'll go to home schools. They will work wherever they need to in order to bring the Waldorf impulse into the world as rapidly and as intensively as possible. So I just want you to think of this as a sort of undercurrent as we talk about these matters through the rest of these days. Something else to consider is the kind of children who are coming into our schools. Now, in the 80s, and especially the 1990s, Waldorf teachers were overwhelmed by the influx of ADHD children coming into the schoolroom, and realized, you know, Steiner didn't talk about this kind of child, or did he? What are we supposed to do? This child's impossible. He doesn't follow any of the rules. You know, circle is agony, and the parents are complaining, and the other children are getting annoyed with him, and so on. And over the past decade or so, with the emphasis on remedial work and the extra lesson, with a deepening of understanding about the causes of ADHD, and also through the use, extensive use of Ritalin, often even in Waldorf schools as well, this situation has come more under control. But now something else is coming, and we could say it's going to be like this. Found in the last decade of the 20th century, the number of ADHD children went up in a spectacular way. We are going to find in the next decade a kind of flattening of that curve, and then it will really go down. By 2020, it may even have a different name, but it will certainly not be as big an issue as it is today. However, we always have something to face, and what's going to happen as the ADHD curve declines, another curve will start to grow. And this is Asperger's syndrome. Now, if you think of the ADHD child, hyperactive, distractible, very, very social, unable to hold a center, unable to focus, and so on. And what a contrast to the Asperger syndrome child, who gets very stuck, overly focused, almost obsessed with facts and figures, and cannot socialize at all. In every way, they are polar opposites. And right now, we are approaching a meeting point where these where one illness, one problem, one challenge is going downhill, and the other is going to go up. So we see we need a different kind of child coming into the world right now. In the end of the 20th century, we needed, in a way, for the Waldorf movement to get more lively, to get more engaged in really meeting a child at the moment. And now the Asperger child calls for a deepening, going into greater depth and having tremendous patience, tremendous understanding. So this is another challenge that we're going to be having how to work with the Asperger child and those ADHD children who certainly for a while will continue to come our way. So we have two A's here, ADHD, Asperger, a third A as well, which is perhaps even more significant than these two behavioral and focusing challenges. And this is the phenomenon of adoption. Adoption is growing and growing and growing at an incredible pace. Certainly, schools that I'm familiar with on the coast, I know schools where one quarter, one third of the children are adopted. One school. So we are now seeing a kind of blending of children in the world. What happens to an adopted child? Let's think about this for a moment. Steiner spoke about there being a number of umbilical cords that are severed. The first physical one is the one we know, of course. But he said for 7 years, there is an etheric umbilical cord which connects the child deeply to the mother's sense of health and well-being, or the opposite, to fatigue, to stress, and so on. So that it's very important for the teacher of the pre-7-year-old, kindergarten teacher, nursery teacher, to have a very deep connection with the mother in particular. The father has a different connection. And in the first 7 years, it's far less important than that of the mother. Then that umbilical cord is severed, and for the next 7 years, there is an astral umbilical cord connecting the child and the mother. So now it's the class teacher's task to really be able to work with the feeling life of the mother, to really make sure that the mother's feelings are in harmony, in sync, with that of the school, with that of the class. So it's very, very important that we are really working with our parents ever more intensively. Then at age 14, the astral umbilical cord is severed, and now there is an ego umbilical cord. And here, in a way, it's all that the mother has made of herself as an individual that is still working, pulsing through the child's being. And then finally, at 21, we are fully, officially born. That's how slow we are as human beings. We need 21 years to be fully born. No animal has any experience comparable to this. Now think of an adopted child. It might be that at age 3, that child leaves China and comes to the United States. What is she connected to? She is still connected to her mother, to the biological mother. What if she never sees the mother again? She is still connected. The etheric, the astral, the ego have nothing to do with space and time in the usual sense. The connection is there. What if the mother has died? The child is still connected for those 21 years to the mother's higher members. They're still working from on high, in a way, onto that child. However, a new family has taken this child. Love streams from a new mother, a new father. They're caring for this child. They're tending her. They're educating her. This makes a possibility that the child will develop a new set of umbilical cords along with the old ones. However, these have to be consciously built and consciously cultivated. It is not enough to say, you know, I've adopted a child from Colombia, and I want the teacher to sing a lot of Spanish songs and, you know, play a lot of Spanish games so that my child feels accepted. And I would say, well, why did you bother adopting the child if you just want them in the culture out of which they came? Didn't you feel there's something here that they couldn't get in their own culture? This is a question. It's a question to ask. Now, remember, my class was 34 children. In a big school, we could lose 4 or 5 children in any given class and hardly notice it. So I could say snooty things like that to parents. I'm not suggesting you do it as well. But I am suggesting that you give this issue of adoption some thought. What is the responsibility of the Waldorf School to work with a child who is developing exceptional connections in the etheric, astral, and ego worlds? These are very, very different children. To look back at ADHD, we could say this is a child who is in a way skipping the etheric connection and rushing ahead into the astral umbilical cord. And this is often the despair of the mother. These children wear mothers out right and left because they're not drawing on those forces that they should be drawing on at a given time. And the mother isn't yet ready to render up her astral forces. She's still trying to give the child the etheric forces. So this is another responsibility of the Waldorf School to help parents with this. The Asperger child, this child wants to remain in the physical and etheric umbilical cord stage. This child does not want to go any further than that. It's an astral body that makes us social beings, because our astral body is never more than 50% within us. The rest of it is out there. The fact that I'm speaking to you and you're listening to me is because really there are astral streams going between all of us. If we only had our own astral body, and if it was all within us, we would be completely antisocial beings. So the astral body forces us to be social. Only the greatest hermits, the greatest saints, are able to bear the agony of enforced silence, or living in a hermetic way, or being imprisoned for long periods of time in solitary confinement. It's one of the worst things. The Asperger child lives in a state of solitary confinement and basically finds it all right, can manage with that. How do we help that child start to go towards the astral umbilical cord to draw on those forces with the mother? Very different connection between mothers and their Asperger children and mothers and their ADHD children. Generally, the ADHD mother just is pulling out her hair all the time and asking everybody and anybody for help. The Asperger mother is often very protective of the child, feels people don't understand him. If you only knew him one-on-one, you'd see, you know, how wonderful he is and how deep he is. He's just very shy. So this is something that we're going to be, again, really asked to work on, to understand the nature of these umbilical cords, the fact that we are born again and again, that the child is born again and again. So here we come to the centrality of the developmental aspect of Waldorf education. Now, when I started teaching, working with a group of severely handicapped children in 1976, and then when I went on to be a class teacher in Green Meadow in 1981, there were perhaps three books about Waldorf education, besides Steiner's lectures. There was nothing about how to teach geometrical drawing except if you could get an old dog-eared copy of Baravalli. That was the only book on physics as well. There was an old Eugen Kalisko book on teaching zoology, which was so filled with misinformation that it was, you know, more trouble to use it than not. There was nothing. We had to make our own materials. We had to figure out, unless we had perhaps a more experienced teacher around to help us here or there, what to do step by step. We had to walk 5 miles to school, sometimes even in deep snow and things like that. Now, you know, you can just look in back at the table there, and you can multiply that table probably by about 50. If you go to Rudolf Steiner College Bookstore, which is such an incredible place, or the Sunbridge Bookstore, and see what's available on every subject, every age, more now than one could ever digest fully. So there you've got it. It's all laid out for you, all the things that you need to do. And yet, yet people are feeling that something is missing, that there's something missing. You go to summer conferences, and very often people complain to me, it's just recipes. You know, it's what to do on Monday and what to do on Tuesday. There's nothing being given, or there's less and less being given. And this is said in all due respect to all of the teacher training institutions. But there is definitely less and less of the developmental depth that constitutes Waldorf education. There's less and less of the anthroposophical basis. There's more of all working with those books and applying them in your classroom. Charter school teachers do this all the time. They often just work with methods, with techniques, with in very little knowledge of what they're really doing, what effect this is having on the child's soul. And they do a perfectly good job, certainly compared to what's going on in other schools in their district. But is that enough? Does that really satisfy the soul and spirit of the Waldorf teacher? And I would say our challenge now in the 20th century, we got to be very good at how to touch the soul of the child. And that's what these technical books arise out of. You know, teach this, teach that in this order. And the child's soul is really met by this. Their feeling life is awakened. It's purified. It's healed in one way or another. Our challenge now and for some time to come is how to awaken the child's spirit, how to meet the spirit of the child. Now, what's the difference between soul and spirit? Are we clear about that? Very often I would say we're not, that there's just a lot of confusion about it. The spirit is really that egoity that lives around the child from a great distance, but nonetheless is able to spark up here and there. And it's that which really makes, perhaps after a difficult week of teaching, you feel one child was met in a way that there's almost a spark flashing, and it makes your week worthwhile. You really, really touch the spirit of that child. And increasingly, I see in schools more and more of good soul connections with the teachers and the children, but really in a way less and less spirit. Where does the spirit shine through the most? Actually, it's in the academic subjects. It's bringing the academic subjects to life, bringing those things like grammar and addition and subtraction, the four operations, things which can almost seem skeletal at times, making them something of the nature of spirit. And what's been happening very often is that teachers are making everything a story. They're personifying everything. We know that with the four operations, you know, the queen minus and king plus and all of that. Where does that come from? Is that something Steiner indicated we should do? Stephen Sagarin, the editor of the Bulletin of the Waldorf Research Institute, wrote a wonderful article in the not present magazine, but the one before that, called Plain Steiner Says, Myths About Waldorf Education. And it was incredible, the things that he pointed to, the over-personification of processes, circle games, among others. He said Steiner never mentioned any of this. This came later. I would say that we in the States have had one disadvantage, which is that at first, a lot of what came into Waldorf education in the United States came from England rather than Germany. And as anyone who's read Charles Dickens knows, there's a quality of sentimentality among the British, which is not always contained. You know, if you think of all the lore of fairy, and that the British are the only people on earth who really believe those photographs were really of girls playing with fairies. You know, I mean, they will believe anything in this regard. And this is how Waldorf came to the United States. And this is something that we really have to be very careful about. If you hear somebody like Ernst Schuberth, when he speaks at Steiner College, talk about the teaching of arithmetic and mathematics, it's not a kind of gushy thing at all. It's demanding. It's really asking a lot of the children. And we have to really be doing more of that. Certainly, parents increasingly get concerned in 6th, 7th, and 8th grade with the academic life of the child. And this is one reason that there's such a high rate of attrition in the uppermost grades. You can't fix it there. You can throw all the textbooks at the children that you want. You know, give them all the line paper and grids and ditto sheets, let's not forget those, and so on. It's not going to do anything. You've got to start in first grade. You've got to have the bigger picture. How am I going to awaken my children's spirit through reading, through writing, through arithmetic? How will grammar help them really take hold of their ego forces? How will algebra really help them find balance in their life of soul and spirit? But that has to be present already in first grade. I would suggest in the way that you teach children to draw, both figuratively and in form drawing, that is laying down the basis for a healthy relationship to academics in grades 6, 7, and 8. That doing those two things correctly, teach the children how to find form, how to find composition, how to follow instructions, and also little by little, how to build up their own sense of self-confidence. So this is something I'm going to discuss further in the next day as well. So we really have to be thinking of these issues. Do I want this class to stay together into the uppermost grades? What do I have to start to do about that right now? How do I communicate to the parents what I'm doing so that they have confidence, they have a sense that we really know what we're doing? And above all today, how do we touch the will of today's child? Because this is really the demand of the children I call the millennial children, that really they are children who live very, very strongly in their will forces. They want to do. They want to be active. And very often, we are hemmed in by the complete conventionality of the Waldorf school classroom, which is a room with four walls. Okay, maybe yours has five walls, but you know, it's a room with walls. The children sit at desks. Certainly they get up, they move, they play games and all of that. But basically, it's a setting for people who are good at sitting at desks and doing what the teacher tells them to do. Is that the only kind of child we are getting today? Now, we could look at this progression, this awakening of the will in Waldorf education, and I want to...